This week on Personally Speaking, our guest is Eddie McClintock, a great actor, but also now a first-time director of a powerful and hopeful film. Stay with us. Hello and welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Gianlosanti, and actor and director Eddie McClintock joins me now. Eddie is starring in and directed the new film Miracle at Manchester, which tells the true story of Bryson Newman, a Catholic high school athlete who is diagnosed with aggressive brain cancer. Family, friends, the community, and strangers pray for Bryson, resulting in something miraculous happening. Eddie also starred for 5 years on Sci-Fi Network's most successful series called Warehouse 13. Eddie McClintock played alongside Emilio Estevez in the Disney Plus comedy The Mighty Ducks and was a series regular in USA Network's thriller Shooter with the late Tom Sizemore. Eddie makes his directorial debut with Miracle at Manchester, which also stars Dean Cain and is streaming exclusively on PureFlix. He's married and is the father of two sons. Eddie's here with us today to talk about his life, his career, his family, his faith, and the new movie he stars in and directs, Miracle at Manchester. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking, actor and director, Eddie McClintock. All right, we're here with Eddie McClintock. And Eddie, I want to begin, first of all, by saying I wish you all the luck with the success of this film. But let me ask you this. You've been known as an actor for a long, long time, very, very much an actor who works. Now you get this incredible chance to be a director. Now, we've had the privilege on the program of years ago, the great film director Frank Capra and Ted Melfi and John Appleton, who directed Rocky. You know, he was here too. But I mention that because they always spoke as a director of a film as a monumental responsibility that people were putting so much trust in you. So I'm wondering, how did it go that this very talented actor now makes this incredible transition to direct a film? It must have been an amazing responsibility. How did it come to be?
Well, first of all, I want to just say thank you, Monsignor Jim, for having me on this morning. And I really appreciate being here. A lot of responsibility. There's a certain amount of trepidation because, as you said, it's, these people are entrusting you to tell their story. And to tell it well. And so I'll just tell you, my dad, who's my hero, he basically raised me by himself. I was not an easy kid growing up, and my dad never gave up on me. I'll be 23 years clean and sober January 1st, so when I was a young kid, I was pretty wild. My dad had every opportunity and every justification to kind of cut me loose, and he never did.
Yeah.
And I've been believing that there are no coincidences anymore. So the fact right. that I'm now going to tell a story about a father's love for his son, it seemed to line up. My dad was very excited about me directing. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately he passed away, right before we started, filming. So, a lot of people were telling me that, your dad's still with you. Your dad's still around you. Your dad is, you can still talk to your dad. And I want to choose to believe that. So that helped me, on my own spiritual path, my own, journey to getting closer to God. And my dad is in every frame of this film. I used that as strength to make the best film that I possibly could. And, thankfully, gratefully, Rick Newman and Bryce Newman allowed me to dedicate the film to my dad.
That's a wonderful thing. And, I want to talk about that loss, though, because it fits very much into the picture. Miracle at Manchester is all about, in my mind, the power of prayer, and that with prayer, amazing things can happen. When your dad was starting to go home to God, I'm wondering, first of all, did you pray that he would stay? And when he didn't stay, and when he was taken from us, does it influence the way in which you view God? I mean, there are some people who say, no, I'm peaceful now because this person I love is with God, and that's his ultimate destination. But other people who shake their fist in God's face saying, you could have made it better, and you didn't. How did you handle it?
Well, a couple of years before my dad passed away, he was starting to get sick, and he started telling me, "Hey, Eddie, I'm saying a prayer for you. I said a prayer for you today." And this was kind of, that was new. That was new. Yeah. And he had never said anything like that to me before. And it really got me thinking, as I said, I'm 22, 20, I'll be 23 years sober. And there's a large God component in AA. But it really affected me to hear my dad, who, as I said, is my hero, tell me that he's praying for me. And, it really got me. It got me thinking, especially then toward the end. As I said, people said my dad would still be there, and I want to believe that. And I'll tell you a quick story. A couple nights before he passed, we were in his room in the hospice, and we were watching March Madness. He died March 15th of last year. And he always loved basketball. And so he and I were watching March Madness in his room, kind of in the dark, but the light from the TV was showing on my dad. And I was eating a bag of Skittles, and we were watching. My dad, he could barely speak anymore, but he mustered up the strength, and he was like, "Hey, Ed, what do you got? You got candy over there?" And I was like, "Yeah, Dad, I got some Skittles." And I was like, "Do you want a Skittle?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll take a Skittle." And I said, "Okay, do you want strawberry, orange, grape, lemon, lime? Which one do you want?" And he goes, I'll take an orange one." So I gave him the Skittle. He could barely swallow at that time either, so he had to be very careful about, he could only take small. So I gave him one orange Skittle, and he had the Skittle. I was like, "How was it?" And he's like, "Yeah, it was pretty good." And we continued on. I put that bag of Skittles back in my bag, and then a couple days later he was gone. On my flight home, I was looking out the window, and I was crying, I missed my dad. And excuse me. And I reached into my bag to get my book, and there was that bag of Skittles. So I kind of was like, "Oh, wow, I'll have some Skittles." And I got to the bottom of the bag. I kind of reached in. I was reading my book, and I reached in. I got the last of the Skittles, and I was getting ready to crumple up the bag and throw it away. And I heard there was still a Skittle in there. And I opened up the bag, and there was one orange Skittle left in the bag. And I kind of just thought, because I'm trying to believe there are no coincidences, and it's all part of the plan, good and bad. And then there was that orange Skittle, and I thought, that's God. That's my dad and God talking to me. So I keep that Skittle with me everywhere I go. I got it in the bag. I got it in the bag in my backpack. And I don't know,
Yeah.
It's it gives me comfort, and it allows me to know that my dad's still with me.
I love that story, Eddie. Eddie McClintock's our guest. He's not only an acting starring in this role of Miracle Manchester, but also he's the director. Eddie, I want to ask you too, because your dad, remarkable man that he was, had a lot of patience. He overlooked a lot. He never gave up on you, and that's an amazing thing for any parent to do. Now, now the circle of life is such that Eddie is now the dad of two teenage boys. And I'm just wondering, like, how do you protect your sons? How do you prepare them for the temptations that exist in the world? You fell for them. God knows I did too when I was younger. How to raise kids and give them some center of gravity morally that they make good choices for themselves. Do you have any clue as to how you can do for your sons what your dad did for you?
Well, you know, as you know, there's no blueprint, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We're all kind of flying by the seat of our pants, and yeah. And I draw from, you know, the things that I hear my dad's voice in my head when I'm trying to parent my own sons. And, you know, I went through a time, I think maybe we all do, where, you know, we think we're smarter than our parents and they don't know anything. And I went through that with my dad. But as I said, you know, like I hear the things that he tried to teach me when I was a kid. And I do the same thing with my sons. And I say to my sons, look, you know, you can roll your eyes right now and you can look out the window and try and tune me out, which is what I did.
Right.
And I said, but you know, I'm your father. I'm your guardian. It's my job. I'm not here to, like, you know, torture you, even though it may feel like torture. I'm here to guide you and try and teach you so that you can go out into the world and be an asset to society and not a deficit. I said, and, you know, hopefully in a few years, you'll look back and you'll hear my voice the way I hear my dad's voice. And you'll go, my dad was right. And he never quit. You know, like I tell him, I was like, I go, you know, I could just say, to heck with it, do whatever you want, you know, and there are plenty of dads out there. I don't know if I'd call them dads, but, you know, men who have had, you know, children or whatever. I said, you know, they could just say, do whatever you want, but I'm not going to do that because I care about you and I love you and you're my son. So, you know, I think the most important thing, because there is no blueprint and I'm not a perfect dad, I just try and always let them know that I love them and I care about them. And, you know, that's all I can do.
Eddie, unlike his dad, does not carry the burden of parenthood alone. He's happily sharing that with Lynn. I mention that because I'm always amazed by what draws people together. You know, I do so many weddings in the course of a year, and I wonder why or how does someone know this is the one for them? And could you give us, Eddie, any insight into, so you're dating this wonderful, beautiful woman named Lynn, and then you make a choice that you can build a life with her. What does she have that made you say, no, I've dated before, but this is the one?
Yes, sir. We met in an AA meeting.
Okay.
And you know, she had this beautiful, incredible, giant smile, and you know, these dark almond eyes. I mean, you know, that's the first thing. You know,
you're
physically, you're attracted to a person, and or you're not, and then you want to get to know them. And we, you know, I went to one of her friends and I got her phone number from one of her friends, and I called her, and she was like, "How did you get? You know, how did you get my number?" I was like, well, you know, I've got my ways. And we started taking walks together with her dog. And her dog's name was Bonham, which is named after John Bonham, my favorite drummer from Led Zeppelin. And I was like, well, that's strong. And, you know, she's just so grounded, and, you know, and that's what I need. You know, she's definitely the yin to my yang. I'm kind of, you know, hyperactive and all over the place and scattered, and she's very grounded. I mean, you know, she went through, you know, she basically raised herself, you know, ended up kind of having to drop out of school early to take care of herself. And then all her friends were going to take the SAT. So she went and took the SAT and scored high enough on the SAT that she got a free academic scholarship to University of Texas, graduated with honors from Texas, from UT, had her own struggles with drugs and alcohol, and then, you know, decided to forgive herself like I did myself and like many other people who are in recovery have done. They've forgiven themselves enough so that they have decided to change their lives and have a better path. And, you know, that was attractive to me. You know, she's just a good woman. And she's got a great spiritual foundation, and she works in mental health and recovery, helping other people that are struggling. And you know, she's just, I don't know. I married up, that's for sure.
No. Well, and I bet she still has that great smile and those almond eyes as well. So she's got all those other things and she's still beautiful. Now, let's go back to, because it's a key moment in your life. Eddie, what was the moment when you said, essentially, I'm tired of being tired. I don't want to be captive to drugs and alcohol anymore. I'm always, again, amazed by that moment of decision. Was it a gradual thing, or did you just come to a point where you said, that's enough?
Well, you know, I moved to Los Angeles to sell corporate insurance for my uncle, and he had no idea that I was a mess because I was a social chameleon. I knew how to play the game. I knew how to, like, when I'd come out here to visit him, I would wear my sport coat and my suit and tie, and I was able to, you know, because I was raised well by my father, and mm-hmm. and he taught me to, you know, look a man in the eye and give him a nice firm handshake. So I knew how to play that game. But on the outside, on the outside, I was just spinning and I was a mess. And after he fired me, and I decided that I was going to try acting, I just thought to myself, you know, I'm either going to give this a real shot or I'm going to end up, you know, back in Ohio, you know, being the funny guy that works the night shift at 7-Eleven. And I just didn't feel like that was my path. You know, no offense to anybody that works the night shift at 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
But I Monsignor, I was tired of apologizing to everyone in my life. I was tired of beating myself up. For what? I don't even really know. I don't really know why I was doing that. I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, as they say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was imperfect. I got sober and then, you know, had like a year and went out and then got some more time. And then I think the final time was I was trying to write a check. It was in the morning and they didn't take my check. And I just, it was, and I just said, there I was in the, you know, I was probably stunk and it was, you know.
Enough was enough. Enough was
enough. Enough was enough. Enough was enough.
Eddie, you know, you are obviously a man, both through the battle with addiction and now through Miracle at Manchester, a man who in the end is very, very much a trusting guy who has hope. I mention that because Ben Shapiro is a very popular guy on social media and all the rest.
I love
Ben. Ben's wonderful. But he said recently, he was going through all the pictures that won Oscars, and he said, you know, most of these pictures are so hopeless, who'd want to go see them? And I mention that because a movie like Miracle at Manchester is filled with hope. And there's a hunger out there for that. Do you have any clue or insight into why Hollywood isn't recognizing that movies like yours are precisely what we need right now?
You know, I'll probably get fired by my agent for this, but you know, Hollywood is godless.
Mm.
And it feels like they mock, you know, not only do they not, you know, pay attention to God or people that, that believe in God, but, you know, they, it seems that they mock God. And I don't understand it. I don't know. It wasn't always this way, you know, back when, you know, John Wayne and back in the day, Hollywood wasn't this way. I don't know what happened, but, you know, I like you just said, we need more films about hope and trust and community. And I mean, the world right now is, it appears to be spinning out of control. So why would we want to go and spend our time watching a movie that, you know, when we walk out, we feel more angst, we feel more, you know, trepidation. You know, when I want to watch a film today, I want to be able to walk out and go, okay, there's still people that believe in each other. There's still such a thing as community. There's still such a thing as hope. You know, I want to walk out and feel better, not worse.
Yeah. No doubt about that. You know, if you remember back to the beginning of It's a Wonderful Life, Frank Capra's movie, where St. Joseph is talking to St. Peter and George Bailey's sick, and Clarence, the guardian angel, says, "What's wrong with him? Is he physically ill?" And the answer is no worse than that. He's discouraged. I find so many of the films today are so discouraging, and your movie is not. Do you hope to continue to be making films like this? Like, Eddie, is this a one-shot deal, or are you going to keep on directing movies of hope and possibility?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I have been, the last few years, things have really slowed down for me in Hollywood. I am a older, heterosexual, white male. And I am at the very bottom of the totem pole right now. And that goes, that's across the board in Hollywood, whether you're a writer or everything. And, you know, I mean, look, it's not sour grapes. It's not. Yeah. And a lot of people are afraid to say it out loud because they're afraid they're going to get blackballed. But I mean, I haven't worked, so it doesn't really matter to me that much anymore. I'm just telling it like it is, you know. Things got really hard. And I don't know if you know, I'm sure you know Dean Cain, Superman.
Sure. Yeah.
Dean and I have been buddies for a while, and I was trying to decide what I was going to do with my life at age 53. I applied to Los Angeles Police Department a few years ago, and because I wanted to do something that, you know, I could be proud of, that my sons would be proud of.
Yeah.
Luckily it didn't work out, because about a week later, all the riots started and the cops were being, you know, Molotov cocktailed. So, but I called Dean up and I just said, "Hey man, I know you do these faith films. Is there any way you can get me in?" And next thing you know, I'm on the phone with Jason Campbell. And honestly, you know, it was less about, "Hey, I want to go make faith films." It was more like, I just want to work.
Right.
You know? But as I've done these films and I've met these people, and, you know, Jason's wife, Heather, was, especially during Miracle at Manchester, after my father died, I started asking questions. She's got a very strong faith, and I just love the people that I've been surrounded with. You know, I mean, I grew up, you know, we would say before we ate, we would say a prayer, and you know, that's the kind of people that I'm surrounded by, and you know, they give their time, they give their effort, they give their hearts to do these films, and a lot of them are just volunteers, you know. So yes, I was worried about, you know, I said to Lynn the other day, I was like, what if I don't ever go back to Hollywood? And she said, maybe this is the path for you. You know, start thinking of it in that way. Maybe your purpose is to do these films and be of help and service in that way.
I promise I'm going to wrap it soon, but for our listeners and watchers who do want to make sure they see this message of hope, and for our listeners and watchers, it's a great uplifting film, both about the power of prayer and about the power of love, unconditional love. And Eddie, where do they find out about going to see this film?
Well, it's right now it's PureFlix has picked it up, and they're going to make it kind of the premier film for their early Easter push. And it's it gets released this Friday on PureFlix.
Okay. So that's the best way for people to get it. Will it eventually, for folks like my mom, come out in DVD format and other places?
Gosh, DVD.
Yeah,
What's it? What's that? What's a
yeah,
DVD?
yeah.
Remember we used to have to stand by the phone with the cord. DVD, I'm sure that it will,
Yeah.
but most likely it'll be on other streaming services. I'm not really exactly
Okay.
sure what. I know that it is playing in 13 theaters for 2 days in Utah. So
Okay.
if you're in Utah,
Okay.
you can see it for 2 days as many times as you want.
Okay.
Other than that, I would say PureFlix is going to be the best way to find it. And PureFlix, if I don't know if you're familiar with PureFlix, but it is the it's the number one distributor carrier of faith-based films and films that make you feel good instead of making you
Right.
want to scream at the sky.
I want to thank Eddie McClintock. I'm going to get it right. It's a tongue catcher, Eddie McClintock, for being with us on Personally Speaking. I hope our folks will watch and listen to streaming or eventually a DVD. Go see and be familiar with Miracle at Manchester. I had an actor on the show recently, and I said, when this is finished, we'll send you a CD of the interview. He said, where would I play a CD? So
Yeah, you have
I
it.
realize the world is changing, but one way or another, I hope folks will watch this film, Eddie. It's a message of hope.
Thank you.
It's a film that very much celebrates faith. And I want to thank you though, because you've been wonderfully upfront and honest, which I think is your nature, and humble in beautiful ways. You're a gifted, talented guy, both as an actor and director, but you don't like toot that in front of people. You're grateful for everything that has come to you. Most especially for the gift of your dad and the opportunities you've had. So, Eddie, thanks not only for the film that you directed and the acting that you do, but for the man that you are. And I hope those boys of yours can watch, learn, listen, and be proud of their dad, because they should be. Eddie McClintock, thanks for being with us on Personally Speaking.
Thank you so much, Monsignor Jim. That means a lot to me, honestly. Thank you so much.
As we end today's program, I want to thank you all for being with us. If you need to contact me, you can reach me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer, Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.